I'm now going further afield. I'm going to speak with Charlene Smith. She posted an article on Facebook, which was published in newafricancommentary.com. And she joins me now on the line from Boston. Charlene, hi.
Hi, Lindsay. Good morning to you.
Thank you so much always for your willingness to speak to us. I was really touched by your article, and if I can quote some of what you posted. You said, our love for our homeland never dies, but we left because something made it impossible for us to remain. And when we go, because we love our birth country despite its flaws, and because most of all we love those we left behind, we build a new country in our imagination. Our dreams create the way we want our home country to be, not always as it is. And then later on you say, what we come to understand is that although we may speak the same language in the new place, we have few points of similarity with our new compatriots. They hear our accent and view us as strangers, exotic even, lesser usually. We hold up as diamonds those Africans who succeed, Elon Musk and Peter Thiel, who invented PayPal and then Tesla, but the most famous Africans, Nelson Mandela, Wangari Maathai, Dennis Mukwege, are those who stayed and served their people through politics, medicine, the environment, all the odds. So the article is called Africans in Diaspora. We walk away and try not to turn back, but tell us what made you write this.
Well, I've actually approached to write it, and when I was initially given the brief, they said, you know, speak as a person who has European origins, who is a white person with European origins. And I said, I don't understand what you're saying. I'm an African. So they withdrew that. And I don't think they expected such a cheeky African. And then I started exploring. I mean, some of those words that you've read are, I'm working on my memoir at the moment, and my memoir is called Leaving, and some of those words that you read are from my memoir. And it's sort of me coming to terms with leaving South Africa, because South Africa always was the greatest love of my life, aside from my children. So leaving it was really, really difficult for me.
And I think it's interesting that you write up, say, we leave because something made it impossible for us to remain. Because for many people, it's not just about jumping ship.
No, it's, you know, this whole jumping ship thing is really such garbage. Because for a start, it's difficult to leave. I was only able to leave because years beforehand I'd married an American and had dual citizenship. So for most people, it's really difficult to leave. And I also, when I left, there'd been two things that had precipitated. One was the murder of a beloved neighbor, and another neighbor, and I investigated his murder and found the killers. But the police themselves were too nervous to arrest them. And then there was the public sector strike in hospitals, and I was volunteering and going in and hadn't realized how acute the shortages were in our hospitals. And I felt ashamed. I thought that, you know, here I'd supported our democracy and our liberation struggle, and yet things were getting worse for ordinary people, and I just no longer wanted to be part of that. And I'd kept getting job offers over the years from the United States and turning them down. And round about the same time, I received another job offer, which I took, and put my house on the market, sold within a week, and just everything sort of lined up to allow me to go. So that was in August. I was gone by the 20th of October in 2010. But before I left, I became really, really ill. And literally, I mean, my cardiologist said to me, he said, your heart is broken, Charlene, because I spent 2 weeks, I didn't even have a farewell party, I had to cancel that. I spent 2 weeks in high care and then was wheeled onto the aircraft in a wheelchair straight from hospital. So leaving was very, very traumatic for me, very hard.
And, of course, in this article, I mean, once again, you say your brief was Africans. You talk about Africans from other places. You talk about people who've left Zimbabwe, saddened by what's going on there. And you also talk about the fact that many Africans are now going to Asia as a destination.
Yes. In fact, incredible numbers of Africans are going to Asia as a destination. I mean, I, at one stage, lived in Japan, but that was long before this huge move. So people traditionally think that if people are leaving Africa, they're going to either North America or they're going to Europe. But not anymore. They're going to Europe in huge, huge numbers. And you've got the statistics in front of you. I don't have them there here with me. But they're doing lots of things. They are teaching. A friend of mine, her son went and taught graphic design and animation in Shanghai, and he's now living in Vietnam, loves it over there. I've got a brother who's teaching English in China and has been doing that for years now and absolutely loves it and doesn't want to come back. So people of all races, whether or not, you know, regardless of skin color, but if you are talented, whether or not it's in the medical field or IT or anything, Asia wants you. Mm-hmm. And if you look at China, which is the fastest growing economy in the world, yeah, if you've got talent, they want you. Mm.
And you say in the article, immigration success favors the young, and you talk about Nasima Mohammed, who's a Zimbabwean, the child of a laborer and a nanny, but ended up in the United States after her sister, not even her, her sister won a scholarship to Harvard to study astrophysics. A wonderful sense of how that happens and how, you know, the Harvard actually paid for her schooling and then a bursary to study education. I mean, that's amazing how this young woman from Zimbabwe ends up on the good side of the American system.
Right. Well. Her sister, first of all, obtained a bursary and a full scholarship to Harvard. Father's an unemployed laborer; he's been unemployed for years. They're from the Bulawayo area. Mother is a nanny. And first of all, her sister goes and studies at Harvard, full scholarship, becomes an astrophysicist, is now living in Cape Town. Then Nazima, and while her sister was at Harvard, they realized she had this talented younger sister who was being educated in Zimbabwe, and the educational system in Zimbabwe is falling apart. So they brought Nazima to the United States and paid for her to finish her high school in the United States. They then gave her a full scholarship to Harvard. She subsequently graduated with distinction. Her area is education, and she became a Rhodes Scholar. So she's presently doing a PhD at Oxford. So she is just this remarkable, remarkable individual. And even though she's had all of these privileges, her obsession is education and education in Africa. And that's the subject of her PhD. So we leave physically, but we don't really leave. We continue in some way, I think for most of us, to feel a commitment to our birth country and also our continent. It's not just it's not only our birth country. I find that everywhere I go, if I see a person who has African features and I can tell the difference between an African-American and an African, I make a beeline for that person and I want to speak to them and I say, oh, you're my homeboy or you're my home sister, and we're thrilled to see each other and to connect with each other because there's this commonality that we sit from the same continent, that red sand is in our blood.
And it is true. You know, we kind of, we hear so often two things, how people go to another country and have to take the Afro-pessimism route and slag off South Africa because they want to justify leaving. And then on the other side, people who think that everyone who leaves because they don't want to live under the changes that have been made. But I mean, your article focuses, as you say, on Africa. You talk about quite a few Zimbabweans. You mentioned Tawanda Mondiwa, who
Mahinda.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't say that right. Who worked with the DRC and a journalist who worked in Zimbabwe, forced to leave.
Yeah. So both of the Zimbabweans that I talk about, Grace Kunje was a journalist. She assisted the MDC in the 2000 presidential campaign, and by 2007, I mean, she was being persistently harassed by the security police, was detained, was tortured with a whole bunch of people, had part of her ear torn off, and she was forced to flee Zimbabwe and actually came and lived with me for a while in South Africa before being accepted as a refugee into Belgium. And in her instance, she was accepted as a refugee into Belgium. The children were accepted into England. So they sort of separated by the channel, the English channel. But, you know, they've had to create a life for themselves. Tawanda, as another example, I mean, people think that we come to these countries and that it's easy for us. Mm. I tell you this, that we work four times harder than the average South African when we come to these countries. We usually have multiple jobs. We work all the time. Tawanda, as an example, he found that he was being exploited even by other Africans who, as he said in the article, sometimes treat you as slaves, you know. So you think that they're going to be your brother, your sister in the diaspora. No, they're not necessarily inclined to do that. They want to exploit you. But he ultimately thought, well, what do people really need here? And obviously overseas we all do our own housework. And he thought oven cleaning, so he started an oven cleaning business, and he's doing really well. But there's all sorts of different things that we've got to, you know, adjust to. On one instance, in his instance, he left his child at home while he dashed down the road to sort out a dispute with somebody else, and neighbors. Neighbors mentioned that the child, who was 10, was at home on its own, and he was charged by the British police, and he's facing a hearing because he left his child unattended. It was only for about 30 or 40 minutes. So that's the difference. That, you know, in South Africa, that wouldn't be considered a problem, but it certainly is in places like Europe or the United States. You never leave your child unattended. So those are also things that we've got to come to terms with, that there's different rules, and whereas in South Africa you can get away with stuff you can't overseas.
One last question, Charlene. The other sad thing is you keep tabs of your country, and you've fallen foul of this yourself, even though you keep in touch. People often say, "What? Who are you? You don't even live here. You don't know what's going on here."
Yeah, but that happens all the time. So we're in this sort of strange situation where we don't really belong anywhere.
So
people in the United States or in the countries that we go to, they don't really like us criticizing, because they think, you know, who the hell are you? You're not born here. You're just a Johnny come lately sort of thing. And people at home say, well, what do you know? You left here. You haven't lived here for a couple of years, etc. And that's true. We aren't entirely in touch, even though we try to be. But what I like to believe is that we become citizens of the world. We become citizens who
tougher and wiser.
Yeah, but also we're not nationalists. We don't wave the flag and say, you know, our flag over everything. we embrace the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Charlene, thank you so much for your willingness, as always, to chat to us. And
thank you, Lindsay.
I hope you thank enjoy you. Your evening or night there in Boston.
I'm about to go to bed, but I mean, is tomorrow a good day? What's it looking like there? You already in tomorrow?
Tomorrow it's a great day, absolutely wonderful. I mean, well, I hate to tell you, I had such a beautiful swim today, and it's going to be another beautiful day. But I was going to say, always a beautiful day in Africa. What can I tell you? Thank you.
It really is. It really is. We've got cold and grey and probably snow again.
Thanks, Charlene.
Celebrate that.
So Charlene Smith coming to us, there. It's hard to leave.